this idea that, they're stockpiling, they have so much stuff. Why aren't they using it? I mean, what are they stockpiling waiting for? If Ukraine is on the edge of breaking, why haven't they deployed these things so they could break through and go ahead and end the war? I mean, how was that in Russia's advantage to let this thing go on for 2 or 3 or 4 more years? Because I don't think they're going to be able to pay for it. The ugly deal, of course, it's ugly because nobody on the planet believes that Russia would actually live up to it. Russia has never lived up to any agreement. Right after they signed, well, of course, Budapest Memorandum is one of the most obvious, but also right after the Minsk Agreement, they launched the largest offensive of that first part of the war in the Donbass region. And the Ukrainians know that the Russians will not live up to any agreement unless they are compelled to. Even President Reagan used to talk about trust but verify. This is who you're dealing with. And so the Europeans also can see that if this so-called ugly deal is jammed down their throat, that it's only going to delay another year or two, and then the Russians are going to start back up again. And so I think the idea that they should take this deal, even though it's bad, somehow that ends the fighting. I don't think that is substantiated by analysis of who and what Russia is and what they have said. Clearly, Vladimir Putin is not interested in peace. What he's interested in is the destruction of Ukraine and the idea of Ukraine as a state. Now, why do I disagree with Daniel on that this could be turned around? Let's assume that Ukraine does what's necessary to address its manpower issues. There are about 2 million women and men of military age Ukrainians that are in Ukraine or else in Europe, women and men that need to be in the armed forces. So they've got to change the model of what they're doing to get some of those people back into the ranks. That obviously has to be done. Secondly, if the West realizes that, if Ukraine fails, it will be because the West failed, and you're going to end up with millions more Ukrainian refugees pouring into Central and Western Europe, which will have significant damaging economic impact for European countries. And then, of course, the Red Army is going to press tens of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers into the Red Army. So the Red Army itself will grow in its capability, and now you're going to have a Russia that is emboldened, and this war is going to expand. So a bad deal is not going to end the fighting. It only guarantees that there will be more fighting from a worse standpoint for European countries. Now, the economic tools, this is the leverage. And I really had hoped that President Trump would use this enormous economic leverage he had to end the war, as he said he wanted to do. And certainly, I believe he's sincere when he says he wants to stop the war. Unfortunately, he's wanting to stop it on the Kremlin's terms. The United States, if we use the economic leverage of helping to shut down Russia's ability to export oil and gas, use sanctions that are enforced, and find ways to replace what China and India, what they need, find alternative sources of energy for them, I think the impact on Russia's ability to continue to fight this war would be immediate. And then, of course, investing in Ukraine's defense industry. There already are some European countries that are doing that. That needs to continue. And I think we should, if we have settled on a strategic objective, which means Russia lives inside its own borders, then we do what's necessary. If we don't, the Chinese are going to be looking at this, and they are going to say, okay, the United States is kind of flexible on this sovereignty and this borders thing. And the United States seems to be slow in getting its defense industry going, and the Europeans are slow on growing their defense industry. That's bad news for Taiwan. It's bad news for the Philippines. It's bad news for everybody that is in Beijing sights.
Can I let you respond to all the points, especially the last one about Xi and other leaders, their territorial ambitions being emboldened by a Russian win? And a Russian win means getting what they want in the current negotiations as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is one point where I could not more strongly disagree with the general and his assessment in here. The deal, the offer between an ugly deal now and a military loss is stark and real and likely. So it's not that you don't like what's happening here and maybe it will result in fighting in the future. If that was the case, Russia wouldn't have to offer a deal now. They would just win. They have all of the advantages and the military and the military capacity right now. So if that was really what they wanted, they wouldn't stop. They would just go now. But they are still willing to have a negotiated settlement because, unlike what the general said, the objective of the Russian side is not conquering more territory. It's having peace on its border. That's what it has said since 2007 when we first started talking about moving NATO further to the east. In 2008, they said, this is a red line. Georgia and Ukraine is a red line. Our people knew that. We've had leaks of several American officials who understood that. And now then we've seen it graphically play out. And gosh, if you want to talk about who doesn't keep their word, how about what the United States and the West has done with 2014 and helping to overthrow the legally elected government in Kiev with the Minsk agreements, all the things. And we now know that we never intended to keep those. It was just to buy time for the Ukraine side. And now then we have in the offer for a peace in 2021, December 2021, to be specific, where Russia said and acknowledged by Jens Stoltenberg, the war could have been avoided if we just took NATO off the table, because that was the problem and the existential threat to the Russian, as it would be for us if Russia wanted to have a military alliance in Mexico. We would never permit it. Why do we think Russia would? But they knew that. We told them. We went ahead and did it anyway. Then the only reason, this is crucial to understand, the only reason we are at this deal where it's an ugly loss, an ugly negotiated settlement or a military loss, is because we abjectly refused diplomacy in April of 2022 in Istanbul. We refused it after the disastrous failed offensive in 2023. We refused it in 2024 when Putin again made that offer of the four oblast, and we're refusing it now. If we refuse this one, every time we've refused it, the terms get worse for Ukraine. The losses get worse. You talk about the slow roll, but when you look at all the things that have added up over the time, it is probably in the hundreds of thousands of men who have died unnecessarily because we would not accept an ugly deal at each of these times, but it keeps getting more ugly. So if we want to do something that's rational, the hope that it gets turned around is not based on rational observation, based on the nearly 4 years of physical evidence that we have and the observation of what the capacity is for making war on the Russian side. To not take this deal now, in my view, is illogical and immoral, because it is virtually condemning more Ukrainians to death and more territory lost to Russia. And at the end of the day, it's not going to change who's going to win. That's already baked in. It's going to determine how bad the loss is. And we're going down a path because we have failed to set an objective that can be attainable. We are now baking in, or at least we're heading towards something that would be even worse. And that is the core issue.
Yeah, well, Daniel, don't forget, Russia had peace on its border until it attacked Ukraine, a neutral country. It had peace on its border since the collapse of the Soviet Union. If there ever was a time that we were really going to be a threat to the existence of Russia, was right in that first year or two at the collapse of the Soviet Union, when NATO was at its strongest and Russia was on its knees. What did we do? We disarmed. The U.S. Army in Europe went from 300,000 troops to 30,000 troops. We sent all of our tanks and attack helicopters home. The German Bundeswehr reduced by half. The British Army of the Rhine left the continent. So the idea that somehow we are a threat, or that Ukraine joining NATO or a Ukrainian independent Ukraine on Russia's border is a threat to the existence of Russia, of course, is nonsense. The idea that somehow the United States or the CIA had anything to do with the overthrow of the Yanukovych government, I don't think is substantiated by any facts, knowing what we know now about Yanukovych's plan and what he tried to do with the police. So I don't think you could point that successfully at the United States. Russian peace offers in Istanbul and other places. Of course, Russia's peace demands are, Ukraine, you disarm and you let us have this territory. That's not a sustainable peace demand. That is a Russian peace demand, but that's not a sustainable or justifiable peace demand that Ukrainians could accept, because they know what happens when Russians show up in their towns and villages. They understand that. They have history, recent as well as long history. And the Europeans also understand that. And these Russian peace demands are not sustainable or just, And so that's why they have been denied. So saying it real loud, saying it a lot of times, doesn't make it so. I think what we have to do is make sure, because this is about more than Ukraine. This is about Europe. This is about stability and security in Europe. And it's in America's interest. It's in Europe's interest that Europe is stable and secure, because Europe is America's biggest trading partner. So it's in our interest that this is stable and secure. And what Russia has done, unprovoked, is to attack a neutral country that has disrupted food and energy shipments, which jacked up prices for all of us, and has put millions of refugees on the road into Europe, which has added to the economic stress on them.
Ben, just before Daniel responds, when you say unprovoked, do you mean that NATO's expansion played no role whatsoever in Putin's decision to invade Ukraine, or played a role just less than what Daniel says?
Yeah, thank you for reminding me that I did not answer that part. So NATO enlargement, and of course, I think the ones that the Russians are most unhappy about were in 2001 when Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania joined the alliance. But the first question would be, why would those three countries ask to join NATO at the earliest possible opportunity? Why would they do that? Because they used to be part of the Soviet Union. They were part of the Russian Federation and Soviet Union. And fortunately, the United States never even recognized the fact that they had been occupied by the Soviets. That was important to those countries. But they know what it's like to be under the thumb of the Kremlin. They know what life is like. And so to get into NATO as soon as they could was about their own survival. Same with Poland, which joined, and the Czechs and the Hungarians in 1999. It was about their security. Estonia is never going to attack Russia. Ukraine, if the Kremlin really thinks that Ukraine was somehow going to attack Russia, or that NATO was going to come into Russia through Ukraine, that's nuts. We had the chance, or the window was there at the end of the Cold War, and we did the opposite of being a threat. We withdrew, we disarmed, we made ourselves weaker rather than taking advantage of when Russia was on its knees. And in fact, we invited Russia to join the G7. We spent billions of dollars and Deutschmarks helping the Russians after the end of the Cold War. We had Russian troops with us in Bosnia in the alongside the NATO implementation force after the Dayton Peace Accord. I remember seeing Russian troops sitting next to our troops in the eating Thanksgiving dinner in a mess hall there in Bosnia. So we have tried for years to have some sort of a normal relationship with Russia. And what we have gotten is Russia invading Georgia, invading Ukraine, supporting the Assad regime and their chemical weapons, and then a large-scale invasion. So if we want peace, pull out. Go back to your own country.
Daniel?
Yeah, there's several things that were just said there, which is just flat out inaccurate factually, just not true at all. Let's start off, first of all, with this, that Russia, there was peace between the two until Russia invaded. 100% not true. From the time of 1991, when the Soviet Union disbanded and Ukraine became a sovereign country, there was no conflict between the two. They were living as neighbors. They had their normal disagreements, whatever, economically, politically, whatever, but there was no conflict at all until we had the 2014, and you can't be honest and say anything besides it was a coup. And to say that the U.S. had nothing to do with it, I mean, there is lots of evidence that we do. Victoria Nuland, probably don't need to go much further than that. All the leaked documents that we had, the fact that there was an agreement between Russia, Ukraine, and NATO, I'm sorry, and Europe on the 21st, I think it was, of February 2014, to have early elections, which the Ukraine side or the Western oriented side would certainly have won. They still said, no, we're going to overturn it. They made Yanukovych fled and they didn't have the early elections. We put who we wanted in there and things went south. Russia still didn't invade that time. Ukraine, on the other hand, did move their troops into East and they had a civil war for 8 years. And they used Ukraine troops against Ukraine citizens ethnic Russian past in the eastern part of their country. Russia helped support with that with arms, ammunition, and other things, but they still didn't invade. They annexed Crimea. That was the first issue. Never would have happened without that coup there. First of all, then after that, Russia stayed out militarily until Ukraine continued to move forward. And NATO, by Stoltenberg's statement, said we will eventually bring Ukraine into NATO. Now, you can't possibly say that there was no threat to the Russian side because we were disarming when we were moving NATO closer and closer to include the Baltics. And then now then we're saying it's going to be Ukraine, too. I mean, that because once you move that troops in there, you have the potential for military forces. You have the potential for missiles, et cetera. Minutes, time flight. No nation would allow that. And to say, well, that's nuts that Russia would think that it's offensive. Would it be nuts if we thought Chinese troops in Mexico were on our border and said, oh, it's just defensive? We would never tolerate that. Never. And so I don't know why anybody thinks that Russia would have a different view or that it's nuts for them to think that way. And the second, yeah, the other part about withdrawal, there was no withdrawal. There was an advancement of military or a military alliance. It's not a political advancement. It's not the EU. It's a military alliance closer and closer to the Russian border. There is a big difference between the Baltics, which the Russians didn't like, and the Ukraine side militarily, because there is the Suwalki Gap, which I know that General's very well aware of, which is pretty easy to defend for the Russian side, and Russian NATO forces would have to go in a very narrow band. It would be easy to knock out. But Ukraine, on the other hand, is almost like an arrow pointing to Moscow in this open territory that if anybody wanted to attack, and the West has twice in the previous two centuries, they have history with that. So there's a reason why they would be threatened by that, where we claim that there's nothing. So you cannot say that Russia is being acting irrationally. You don't like it? I get it. But again, I go back to this, which you just can't escape. It is irrational and immoral to continue trying to get a military success of any kind on the West because it's not attainable. The losses on the Ukraine side have been too great. You can't overcome them. No training, no amount of ammunition is going to turn the tide because Russia already has more of those than the West side is going to get in the foreseeable future. They already have millions more that they haven't even gotten into forced mobilization. If they're starting to have a problem with recruitment, that's not a shock, but it's also indicative of that Russia can do the forced mobilization, which Ukraine has been doing almost from the outset. And now then they don't have enough. They lose more through casualties, people fleeing the country and desertions than they have bring forced mobilization in. So they're getting smaller and the Russian side is still getting bigger. So there's no rational path to doing this. And to do so is to condemn Ukraine to death politically and physically. That is the truth.
Yeah, Daniel, I'm surprised, man, especially knowing as much about history as you